This morning, we're going to be in Genesis chapter 4, if you want to open there. At Christmas this year, my sister's husband, I guess it was my whole sister's family, anyway, they gave everybody just a fun little gift. They gave us all a pack of baseball cards, 1988 Donruss cards, and you're like, what? 1988 Donruss. So, you know, I get open it up and I think this is a trip down memory lane, nostalgia, you know, looking back at old players. Ooh, a Carlston Fisk, Jack Morris, he's a Hall of Famer. Mitch Williams, you know, these names I know, Dwight Howard, Ken Griffey. I was like, Ken Griffey Jr. No, it's Senior when he played for the Braves. All of these things. But as I grew up a Cubs fan, and so I was looking for the Cubs and there's a Mike Brumley. I'm like, shortstop. No. He didn't play shortstop. That was Dustin. But anyway, and so then I'm like, I don't even know who that is. And then I look at the stats and I'm like, oh, that's why. But now then I got to see Lee Smith and stuff. As a Mississippi State alumni, I thought it was pretty cool when I found a Rafael Palmeiro card. But then I found the Nolan Ryan card, and I was like, oh yeah, Nolan Ryan. He was a good one. And so then we, of course, start looking up how much all these things are worth and everything, and just about all of them are 10 cents, 20 cents, or whatever. If you have a Nolan Ryan graded, like the top grading of baseball cards, the Nolan Ryan card actually is worth a little bit. Now, you can tell I still carry these around in this little box. That's how much I think of the gift, because it was a fun thing. But, you know, you see the old binders where it's like they switch it, and every year as they get better cards, they'll go through and they'll put them in order of which ones are their favorites or which ones are the most expensive. If you really like one, you can put them in the little sleeves, or they start making those hardcover sleeves if you really wanted to protect it. I even have a couple of my favorite cards that I put the two sheets of glass that have screws in the corners. That's if you're really wanting to protect it. Well, I didn't do that. And I said that it could be worth $120, $150. It's like, whoa, if it's graded highly. But guess what? They don't accept my grading. And if you can find a card shop, I don't even know where those are anymore. And if you can have all of this, and so at the end of the day, I still have it. It's not that I couldn't use an extra $120. That'd be nice. But it's, you know, all these ifs, and so it's still in the stack with all the rest of them. And that's where it is. And I say that this morning, one, because you think about the grading system and who says that it's, is it your favorite? Is it the one you like the most, the one that have a tie to your connection, like me and Mississippi State with the Rafael Palmeiro, or the Cubs? They were my favorite team, or you know, what is it that is the evaluative thing? When it comes to worship, what is it that is evaluative, and what makes it worth it? What makes it good? Now, this morning, hopefully you haven't used the criteria of did I like it or not for whether or not we worshiped, or how was the worship this morning. Of, you know, there's no exit survey. Sometimes I would like exit surveys of, you know, what was this, what was that. But that's not what I'm talking about. Think for a moment, if you were to go way back in time before you ever learned how to worship. Go back in time before the cross. Go back in time before any song that you like was ever written, because there was a time before your favorite song, even if it was written in the 1400s, there was, you know, 3,500 years that people weren't singing that, and yet they were still worshiping. So go back in time to the time where it's Adam and Eve, and there's only two children that are named at this point. Now, there's a whole lot of more kids. The Bible doesn't record every kid's name that was born. In fact, it says in Adam and Eve had other kids. They shall not be mentioned in the Bible. So there's other people here. But we know that there is Adam, there's Eve, there's Cain, and there's Abel. And what we're looking at today involves worship. But this was before God spoke to Moses and said, this is how you are to worship. In your daily Bible reading, you might be to the point now where you start getting into the Levitical laws where it says, bring this sacrifice and do this with it and bring this sacrifice. And if you can't afford that, then bring this sacrifice. Before any of that took place, how would you worship? And whenever we get to looking at it, you'll notice that this is it, when Cain and Abel came face to face with God, there was still such a close connection with God where God still walked with them, not like it was in the Garden of Eden, I don't think, but yet there was still a closeness that was there, as we'll see. How would you worship? And how would you determine what to worship? Whenever we sing the song, I can only imagine what it will be like. Will I stand for you, Jesus? Will I bow for you, Jesus? Will I be able to speak at all? You know, what will I do in that day when I see you face to face? What would you do if you were in the presence of God? Before it was prescribed, it seems like they were still bringing offerings before the Lord. Now, it's an argument from silence to say that there wasn't a prescription, or there was. The Bible just doesn't make sense, doesn't make it clear. If God had already told them, if God had told Adam on your way out of Eden, and hey, whenever you come before me, bring this kind of offering. It doesn't say explicitly what happens. All we know is that they had enough of a relationship with God that they still found it appropriate to bring a gift to God. Now, think about the little drummer boy. I have no gift to bring, so I'll bring a drum. You can think about the little kid that has no money to put in the offering plate, so they climb in it themselves. We think of all these stories about creative ways of bringing gifts to God. And we don't know what was prescribed, but we can still tell something about their heart from what they did choose to bring. And so look with me, if you will, in Genesis chapter 4. This is after, in Genesis 1 and 2, God is shown to be enough. He's enough to create everything. He's smart enough to make it all fit together. He's strong enough to achieve it by His power and His alone. He is able to speak and bring order to all the chaos and order to everything, and He is enough. And then we saw in chapter 3 that whenever mankind decides that God isn't enough, or that they want to put themselves on the throne, what happens whenever they reject God? Well, they're separated from God. And there is a separation that's there. And then chapter 4 is going to continue it on even more. If you want to fast forward and think about it in New Testament terms, or the way Jesus put it, the first commandment is this: to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. In Genesis chapter 3, Adam and Eve failed to love the Lord the God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength. And so because of that, they were separated from God. Because of that, all of creation is groaning under the weight of their sin. But then in chapter 4, we see the continuation of that. If we fail to love God for all He's worth, then we're going to fail in the one that's likened to it. Jesus said the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God, and the second one likened to it is to love your neighbor as yourself. And when mankind quit loving the Lord with all their heart, then it introduced and it brought in that second one, where they then failed to love their neighbor, or love their brother, in this case, as themselves. So Adam and Eve, they are now out of the Garden of Eden. They now have a broken relationship with God. It's not that they don't have a relationship anymore, but because He has been providing for them in grace all along. But in this new relationship, Adam and Eve, they are a married couple, and they conceive and give birth to Cain. She said, "I have had a male child with the Lord's help." Now, we could talk about argument from silence. We could say a lot of different things. I kind of want to think that maybe the first child born might have actually been a girl. Maybe the first four or five. I mean, hey, Brother Darren can testify. You can have four girls in a row, and you'd be like, where's the boy? And you know, Eve was probably like, hey, I want to dress her up. We're going to be Twinkies in our leopard skin onesies, or whatever it is that they're wearing. And so, you know, who knows? Was Cain the actual firstborn, or was there girls born before? We don't know, but we know that it is important enough that God said, that Eve said, I have a male child with the Lord's help. And she gave birth to his brother Abel. Now, was he the next in line? We don't know, but we know that there's Cain, there's Abel. And Abel became a shepherd of the flocks, but Cain worked the ground. In the course of time, Cain presented some of the land's produce as an offering to the Lord. And Abel also presented an offering, some of the firstborn of his flocks and their fat portions. The Lord had regard for Abel and his offerings, but He did not have regard for Cain and his offering. Cain was furious, and he looked despondent. Now, they both bring something. Cain, he's a farmer. He brings some farm produce. Abel was a shepherd. He brings some sheep, some shepherding produce, some of the animals, some of the firstborns. Now, what is it? You might hear a lot of different ideas tossed around. Is it because without the shedding of blood there can be no remission of sins? Is it because animal sacrifice is the only acceptable sacrifice? It's once again an argument for silence. We don't know that God made that explicit yet. Possibly, but there's also in Deuteronomy and Leviticus, there's different places where he prescribes how to give an appropriate grain offering. So maybe it's not that. Is it because Abel gave some of the first produce and Cain just gave some? Now that might be making a lot of that word some, but it says Cain presented some of the land's produce as an offering to the Lord. Is it because the heart with which he gave was not true? I think that's ultimately where we have to end up. Because Hebrews chapter 11 gives us this commentary. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith, he was approved as a righteous man because God approved his gifts. Even though he is dead, he still speaks through his faith. See, Abel gave gifts in faith. And Cain evidently did not. Was it because he brought the wrong type, or was it because he didn't prioritize in giving to God? I feel like maybe it was a bit of a responsibility. He's like, and we don't know where along the line this is. This is somewhere in the first 130 years of the world, because we know that Seth hadn't been born yet, and he was born when Adam was 130 years old. So sometime in that first century of the world, this takes place. And whatever the dynamics are, they come before God. And whether it has now become so for Cain that it's just a ritual or what I'm supposed to do. I have a hard time thinking that you can go into it with, hey, I'm going to go meet with God. And I'm going to bring him just, okay. But yet we do that sometimes. It's hard for us to think that we are going to go and present it to God as if God, it seems the relationship there, they would have met if not face to face, or some way the presence of God was there, and he's going to come and bring the wilted vegetables, or he's going to bring the cucumber that he let get a little too big, or he's going to bring the tomato that's got a few blights on it. And we think about coming and giving that and saying and having God open it, but for some reason, Abel's sacrifice is not offered in faith. It's offered out of a sense of legalism, a sense of obligation, maybe a sense of, hey, I gave you something, now you give me something, a little quid pro quo with God there. But he doesn't come offering it in faith, and whenever God comes to him and challenges on him, he said, the Lord said to him, he said, why are you furious? Abel and his offerings were regarded by God, but he did not have regard for Cain and his offering. And Cain responds by getting furious, and he looks despondent, and he starts shifting and placing blame elsewhere. You know, I don't know what it was like as if they both came and presented their offering and God did a judge. Do you watch reality TV shows, some of these cooking shows, when it's like, all right, in the top tier today, our winner for tonight is going to be Abel. He made the best sacrifice, and so we are going to take his gift, and you're the winner. Cain, you're going to be eliminated tonight. It just did not cut the stuff tonight. You know, I don't know if that's how it exactly played out, but Cain knows that his offering wasn't enough. God says that your offering, I'm not going to have regard for it. It's not offered in faith. It's not offered with the heart that is wholly given to God. It's not the responsiveness in which God not only deserves, but he also demands and what is appropriate for him. And so whenever that happens, Cain gets upset. And he says, and God says to him, why do you look despondent? If you do what's right, won't you be accepted? But if you don't do what is right, sin is crouching at the door, is desirous for you, but you must rule over it. See, Cain even now had the opportunity to respond and to repent. Cain, even now, he's done what is wrong, but he's given the opportunity to respond and repent. And how often do we get the check engine light on? Is your check engine light on just because they just thought about putting another light and buzzer on it? Because they could charge you more if they put that on there? The check engine light means check your engine. Something's going amiss. You better find out what it is. Something's not right. But whenever the check engine light comes on, we're supposed to then do something to fix the problem, not ignore it. Or not get mad and say, stupid check engine light's on. And whenever the check engine light comes on, that's the sign that says, hey, something's not right. Get it fixed. And here God comes to Cain and says, look, it's not right. But Cain, rather than saying, I'm sorry, God, I should have brought you of the first fruits. All things come from you. I know that everything that in the ground, I know that I toil, but I know that you caused the growth and I should have brought you the first fruits. I should have brought you more because you are worth so much more. I'm embarrassed to say that I even showed up and tried to say, this is what I think of you, God. But he did not have regard for God, and so the gift that he gave, God then did not give regard for Cain's gift. And Cain now gets mad. And so he says to his brother Abel, let's go out to the field. And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. It's not love. He first of all did not love the Lord his God with all his heart, soul, mind, and strength and gift. And then because of that, it led him to not love his brother as himself. He failed then to love. If you go back and you look at some of the verses of in 1 John chapter 3, it says, unlike Cain, or back up to verse 11, we should love one another. Unlike Cain, who was of the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his deeds were evil and his brothers were righteous. Cain, rather than accepting that he was evil, that he was the one that was in the wrong, he's instead like, I don't look as good to compare to him. Well, if I take him out, then I will look better. Then I won't look worse compared to him because him won't be there for me to look bad next to. If I'm the only one in the game, then of course I'm going to win. And so he had a heart that was evil and a heart that sunk. And the whole mindset is carried on in the book of Jude. He talks, now this isn't talking directly to them, but he's writing. He's saying, look, in the same way these people, it's always great whenever somebody says, these people. In the same way these people, relying on their dreams, defile their flesh and reject authority and slander glorious ones. Then going down a little further, these people blaspheme anything they do not understand, and what they do not understand by instinct, like irrational animals. By these things they are destroyed. Woe to them, for they have gone the way of Cain, have plunged into Balaam's error for profit, and have perished in Korah's rebellion. See, here, it's more than just one isolated event. We want to look at something isolated and isolate that out and say, I had a problem there. But it was because it wasn't just that he murdered his brother. He murdered his brother out of jealousy and out of envy. He murdered his brother because his brother did what was right and he did what was wrong. He murdered his brother, which was an evil act, not in isolation, but because his heart was not loving God and so therefore not loving his neighbor, his brother, as himself. And it's all wrapped up into who he was, and it all started when he failed in his worship and admiration of the Lord. When he failed to love the Lord, the God, with his heart, soul, mind, strength. When he failed to love the Lord by presenting an appropriate gift offered in faith, then that put him down a track that was all his undoing. And so then the Lord came to Cain and said, where's your brother Abel? He said, I don't know. Am I my brother's guardian? Or am I my brother's keeper? And we think about that, am I my brother's keeper? We were watching, I don't even remember what it was we were watching, but there was a commercial for one of these shows, and the guy said, like it says in the Bible, am I my brother's keeper? I said, you do realize that you're indicting yourself, right? The Bible doesn't endorse, am I my brother's keeper, that you're not supposed to look out for one another. It's the complete opposite of that. Am I my brother's keeper? Yeah, you're to love your neighbor as yourself, love your brother as yourself. All of the one another things that we talk about, to love one another as yourself, to encourage one another, even as we see the day approaching, to greet one another with a holy kiss, to confess sins to one another, to bear one another's burdens, all of the one anothering of one another. You can call it being a guardian, you can be it your brother's keeper, or you can just call it to love your neighbor as yourself, which is a direct flow from loving God. From seeing that God has given you not just a list of do this, don't do that, do this, don't do that. Do this, don't do that, do this, don't do that comes because we don't automatically love our neighbor as ourselves. All of the do's and do nots are just to help our thick skulls get it through there, how we're actually supposed to do this. How we're actually supposed to. If don't you love it when a teacher gives you an assignment to write an essay, and that's all they say? What do you mean write an essay? How many pages? However many you need. Well, what does the topic need to be? As long as you sufficiently cover it. Come on! It's almost as if we want them to tell us exactly what it's got to be and how long it's got to be and all the little details. And God says, love the Lord your God with your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And in doing that, it uncovers everything. That's God saying, here's your prompt. Love me and love other people. And it's only whenever we say, well, can I do this? Can I do that? Do I have to do this? Do I have to do that? That's when he starts getting into the nitty-gritty and the details of how it's done. But in our heart, if we worship God with a heart wholly given to him, if we worship him with a here's my response to what you've done for me, then our offering will be acceptable. If we love our neighbor or our brother as ourselves, then nobody has to tell us don't kill him because we know that that's not right. Whenever, but Cain comes and says, am I my brother's guardian? He very well could have said, well, he wasn't my guardian. When I was offering a bad sacrifice, he didn't say, hey, man, don't know if that's what you really want to bring to God. You want to get on this? You want to get in on this gift that I'm giving? It'll make you look better. Like kids get in on giving their parents birthday presents with the other sibling or Christmas presents. Hey, do you want to get in on this? Hey, he wasn't my keeper. Why should I care about him? And he starts bringing in the excuses and bringing in everything else. And God said, what have you done? Your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. See, what Cain thought would have been a good thing, let's eliminate the competition. Even in that, it was crying out to God. How many of you like artwork? That's a weird question. So have you ever seen artwork that is basically a coffee stain ring? I have to admit, I kind of think it looks pretty neat. And sometimes I have a lot of 3x5 index cards. I love these things right here. And I put them down and I'll put my coffee on it all the time. And sometimes it makes that little ring and I'm like, that's kind of pretty, you know. I kind of like that as a piece of art. And I got to thinking about that whenever he says, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. What Cain thought as Abel's blood, whoever taught him how to kill, whether he slit his throat, beat him over the head, whatever it is he did to kill his brother, he thought, you know, my world looks a little nicer now that I don't have to be compared to him. Now that everybody doesn't have to say, well, aren't you Abel's brother? He offers the good sacrifices. You know, my world, it's kind of pretty. It's kind of poetic. He thought it would be a good thing, but yet even that, God says, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. See, the thing about a coffee stain, one, it means that it's ruined something else. It also means that that's coffee that's not going to be drunk, which is what it was meant to be used for. It is meant to be a beverage, not something else. And so what might have something that we thought, oh, that's kind of poetically pretty, is actually a cry out that something is wrong. And for Cain, he thought this was the solution, but now even that is crying out. Now not only did he fail to love God and what it is that he gave him, now he also did not love his brother, and his very blood cries out. He says, so now you are cursed, alienated from the ground that opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood you have shed. If you work the ground, it will never again give you its yield. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth. And so now in parallel with what happened in the previous chapter, God comes looking, just like God came looking. He says, where is it? What have you done? Just like he asked the woman, what have you done? And now there is an expelling. Once again, while they were expelled from the garden, now Cain is expelled from among the other people. But once again, God even offers grace in that. Because Cain answered the Lord and said, my punishment or my sin is too great to bear. Was he contrite? I kind of doubt it. Since you are banishing me today from the face of the earth, and I must hide from your presence and become a restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me. Now, wouldn't that be, now, isn't it just like him? Look, whoever finds me is going to kill me. And to which God, if he was sarcastic like me, would probably say, like you killed your brother? It's funny how we're always the exception. There's always some reason. I know I killed him, but I don't want anybody to kill me. I know that people might be mad at me for killing Abel. I know people loved him, and I know what's going to happen. People are going to kill me, and that doesn't need to happen. And it's always but my situation is different. You just don't understand what I'm going through. I know God says that don't talk harshly about somebody, but I gave him a chance. They got on my last nerve. It's kind of like think about the song, think about the fellas that I haven't kissed, you know, because she's been so good this year. Well, it's kind of like that. Think about all I haven't done. The exception to the rule. I know that I broke this law. I know that I did this. I know that I did wrong, but it really shouldn't apply to me because. And so Cain is throwing that out and says, look, I'm going to be a restless wanderer. Whoever finds me will kill me. And the Lord in his grace said, in that case, whoever kills Cain will suffer vengeance seven times over. Seven times over. God said, look, you have sinned, but yet even now I will put a provision on you. And he placed a mark on Cain so that whoever found him would not kill him. Then Cain went out from the Lord's presence and lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. And so that continued once again. God put things in place so that he would be provided for. A few years ago, we were called one day. Rochelle was the one that got the phone call. And it was people that were, this is not in Monroeville. And they said, hey, there are three kids here whose mom died. We need you to take them in. And she's like, we take in kids, but tell us some more. And it was a woman that was in the United States illegally from Guatemala, and she had three kids. She died in a car wreck, and so now they were wanting us to take the kids in, and our first response was, well, did you call DHR? And they're like, no, we didn't call DHR. She's not here legally. So how are we going to get into all of this? And we ended up getting the kids and had them for a little while. They've been adopted now by a great family, end of the story, all of that, yada, yada, yada. But our first response was, how do we do this? Like, how do we deal with this messy situation where these kids are hurt, but they're here illegally, and the mom and the dad is in prison back in Guatemala, so we don't want them to go back to the dad that's in prison and that whole situation, and how do they get there? And the whole thing was just a big mess that we had to figure out. How does all of this work together? Because we have a messy world and messy situations and all of the going on in between this and that. And so we had to wait until it's like, okay, we want to take them in, but we've got to do this. First, we've got to get DHR involved. So we got DHR involved, and the DHR is the one that, I mean, we already had the kids at this point, but it all got worked out. But there's a whole lot of things and a whole lot of messy situations that get worked out. And so here, Cain says, look, I know I'm going to be killed. How do I live with what I've done? How do I live with what's going on? And so he comes, and God in his grace says, look, you have sin, but it's a good thing he doesn't, every time any of us sin, say, that's the end of you, I'm done with you. He still extends this grace. And so he works out the legal details of it all, but that doesn't mean that there weren't consequences and things that go on in the midst of it. Because now Cain has been said that if anyone kills Cain, he'll be avenged seven times over. If you keep reading down, Cain then is intimate with his wife, and she gives birth to Enoch, not the Enoch that walked with God and was no more because God took him. He'll come later, different line. And then Cain became a builder of a city, and then Arad was born, and Mahujael, and Methushelah, and Lamech. And Lamech took two wives for himself. And now that's the introduction of something that's going to be contrary to loving God and loving one another. Because if you go back and you look, whenever God created and said everything is enough, he said now a man and a woman will join and become one flesh. Not a man, a woman, and the three will become one. And so this is already starting to defy God's creation order. Whenever we don't love God with all our heart, then it ends up not loving our neighbor as we are supposed to, as ourselves. And so we see that sin comes in this sin family. And then it keeps on going. But there's some good things that happened also. He was the father of the nomadic herdsmen, and his brother's name was Jubal, and he was the father of all who play the lyre and the flute. And then Zillah bore Tubal-Cain, who made all kinds of bronze and iron tools. So he had musicians, and the first musicians that played the lyre and the flute. came from this family, and it's a good thing. And the bronze workers and the iron workers came from this family. And God's common grace for all of this stayed with Cain's family even then. And in the midst of it all, we take from that and we learn that just because we sin doesn't mean that there won't be some good things that happen. Doesn't mean that it's the end of the days. But if we'll see in a few weeks, God has bigger plans. And we also see that God's common grace allows good days to happen, allows good things to happen. But then we also come down, and Lamech said to his wife, to his wives, Ada and Zillah, "Hear my voice, wives of Lamech. Pay attention to my words, for I killed a man for wounding me." Oh, he fits his great-great-great-grandfather's mold. And he says, if Cain is to be avenged seven times over, then for Lamech it will be 77 times. And so he takes what he learned from his family, that it's okay to kill. And he takes what he learned from his family and he multiplies it. And rather than God saying it will be avenged seven times, he takes it into his own account and says, God said this, but I say this. And it's going to be even worse if somebody kills me, offering threats. And so because of Cain's sin, his family line shows people that, yeah, they had some good things happen, but they kept on walking away from God. Oh, I can choose what I want to do with my marriage. Oh, I can choose what I want to do. I can kill somebody if they injure me. Oh, you think it was bad if somebody killed Cain? It's going to be even worse for me. And they started speaking on behalf of God's name. All this happens when we fail, when we rewind it all back to where it starts with, he failed to love the Lord with all his heart, soul, mind, and strength. And in failing to love the Lord, he offered a sacrifice, not in faith, but that was a lesser than. Whether it wasn't the fat portions, which was the good part, whether he kept the good stuff for himself, or whether he offered the leftovers, or whatever it is, he did not respond to God appropriately. And once he stopped responding to who God was, then he quit living appropriately also. And his failure to love the Lord led to a failure to love his neighbor as himself. If you go back and you think about the evaluation of baseball cards, I said it doesn't really matter how I evaluate it. It doesn't matter how much I applaud. If it's my favorite player, it doesn't matter if I think, oh, this is an awesome card. It doesn't matter what I think about it. It only matters what the professionals say about it. But really, even if you have a pristine card, you can have a pristine Todd Plunkett baseball card, and you know what it's going to be worth? Nothing. It's not going to be worth anything because I didn't win seven Cy Youngs. I didn't have more strikeout. I didn't strike out more people than anybody else in all baseball history. I didn't have more one hitters than anybody else in all of baseball history. I didn't do any of that because the card is really only worth something because the person that the card represents is where it really gets its value. And if we kind of tie that in to how it is we're worshiping and how we're loving other people, it doesn't matter. It matters what we do, but what we do only matters and where it comes from. Are we living in accordance of faith? Is what we do living in accordance with seeking to love God and to love man? Or instead, are we bringing something to God, hoping that it's enough that he will put more money in my bank account? Are we bringing something to God, hoping that it'll be all right? Maybe I won't win, but maybe I won't lose. Are we bringing something to God? And I don't just mean of our finances, although that's clearly a biblical mandate that we are called to give God of our first fruits. But anything, our time, our energies, who we are, do we look at who God is and what God does and how we respond to him? Is it based out of love? He says that the world will know that we are his children if we love him, if we love one another, if we obey him and follow in living that out. So I ask you this morning, not have you killed anybody? I ask you this morning, I want to go back before that and ask you, have you worshiped this morning? And if you've worshiped this morning, what have you worshiped with? With all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, all of your strength? Because worship is our response to who God is and what he's done. And so I ask you this morning, have you worshiped him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. As we go into this time of invitation, I ask you to stop and think about that. And maybe this morning, whenever we sing, you need to sing loudly and boldly, and you need to say, I have been worshiping God with half my voice. Or I have been worshiping God with my mind, but not with my voice. Or I have been worshiping God with my mind and my voice, but not with my heart. I have been worshiping God with my mind and my heart, but not my soul, not who I am. And maybe there are some, you are having a reserved worship. But maybe also you are having a reserved love for your neighbor. Oh, I've worshiped the ones that I like. I've worshiped the ones that, not I've worshiped, I've loved the ones that I like. I've loved the ones that I'm closest to. I've loved the ones that could be of mutual benefit to me. Or do we love them as an expression of who God is? See, what we do and how we live ends up coming back to who God is, or what we think of Him and how we respond to Him. And so this morning I ask you to contemplate that. And I invite you to sing with all of who you are. But maybe you want to talk this morning. Maybe you want to surrender your life to God. Maybe you want to pray at the altar. Whatever it is, I pray that you would respond, because He is worth whatever He's calling on you to do, even now. Let's pray. God, we come to you this morning acknowledging, God, that so oftentimes we fail to worship you for who you are. God, that we try to make our own judgments on how we're supposed to live, when, God, we know that in you, you've already described it all. God, I pray that we would respond to you now with the heart and lives that are given over to you. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions about today's sermon or what it means to be a follower of Jesus, please reach out to us. It is our prayer that God would continue to help us know Him more through His Word. You can find past sermons and other helpful resources on our church app or our website, ebcmonroeville.org. Until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of God's Son.